Hello and welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Be sure to follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Harris Wishard. And joining us again, OTG writer Gregory Alicata. What's up, guys?
What's up?
What's going on, Nick? Greg, glad that you're with us today.
The day
before the Super Bowl, but a lot of NBA stuff to go over.
Yeah, a lot of NBA stuff. We got an updated OTG ranking page. We got more trade rumors. We got D-leaguers making splash in the NBA. But to start off, we'll go right into the ranking page. So if you don't know, at OTGBasketball.com, every month we update our ranking page. We rank top five point guards, shooting guards, small forwards, power forward centers, and we do a power rankings as well. With it, the point guards, we got James Harden at number one, Russell Westbrook at number two, Steph Curry at number three, John Wall at four, Kyle Lowry at five. What are your guys' initial thoughts?
Yeah, I don't have any complaints. I think this is like the best order. I think who stands out, I mean, of course, James Harden, but John Wall is like having like a really great season. Only four losses in January right now, and like the Wizards are like streaking towards the top of their conference. So props to Washington for getting back on track after like a tough start to the season.
Washington is currently the third seed in the Eastern Conference ahead of Toronto.
Wow.
So, yeah, John Wall, I was kind of happy to see John Wall here at number four trying to get in some love. I know, like, a lot of people don't give him as much hype. We talked about it a little bit last week, Harris. Mm-hmm. You guys have any thoughts about Isaiah Thomas or Kyrie Irving not being on there?
Yeah, Kyrie, when you initially read that and I'm looking at it now, it's hard for me to envision an NBA without thinking that Kyrie Irving is a top five point guard. So, although
this is based off current play, not just overall.
Yeah, no, of course. But, you know, Lowry and Wall have been terrific, but I think I'd still put Irving five or even four, even though that those two guys may have been better of late the last few weeks. But it's just hard for me to picture an NBA with Irving out of the top five.
Well, I think the argument you could probably make for those two guys would be their defensive ability over Kyrie.
Yeah.
Just because Kyrie's not a consistent defender. And, I mean, Lowry's out there. He's a consistent defender. He's a playmaker. He brings that leadership and toughness. And John Wall kind of does some of the same things.
Yeah. And then the list is, like, almost, like, pretty much pure point guards that, like, that can really dish and score at the same time. And Kyrie always seems like, to me, more of, like, a dual guard, like, more of a scorer. And, like, I think that's, like, part of the reason why LeBron's been so vocal about getting a playmaker, like, Kyrie passes, but not to the volume of, like, Wall or Westbrook.
Kyrie's best games are usually games where he's scoring 36, 40-plus points and having probably five and under assist.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree with you, Greg. I could see that's why the Cavs also need another playmaker. It's also really tough at the point guard position because we don't even have guys, like I mentioned, Dame Lillard on here, Isaiah Thomas. So, like, it's tough. But do you think, you know, Steph Curry's been starting to cook recently. Do you think he can get himself back into that top two spot?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's there right now. I think after Kevin Durant kind of gave him that little talk, that little pep talk of, like, you know, just do you, don't worry about me. He's kind of gotten back on track and had some, like, explosions on the last recent games. Like, killing Charlotte for, like, well, yeah, like 39 points, I think. And then he, like, destroyed the Clippers, like 40 points. He's dancing again, like. So, yeah, I think he's back on track. He's playing like the Steph Curry of, like, last year, the guy that we all knew. And I think that's scary for just everybody else.
The 2015-2016 Curry has made a few appearances on my television screen over the last couple of nights. Nights. And it's been very exciting to see. Yeah. I think, you know, those first 30, 40 games, obviously the transition period, obviously adding a guy – of Durant's magnitude. So I think it was natural that he was going to have to take an offensive step back. But like Greg mentioned, there was a talk that they had and figuring these things out and allowing Curry to kind of flow offensively like he has over the last few seasons and try to play at that level. I've also heard a couple people say, when is this team going to be better? Are they going to be better when, you know, Curry's the top guy? Are they going to be better when Durant's the top guy? I'm not so sure that really matters that much. I think really I just wanted to see him kind of reclaim his swagger and play as loose as he was playing, relaxed as he was playing, and taking some of the shots that he was taking. So I don't really think who the number one guy really matters. But, yeah, Curry could take that push. And I didn't know if I didn't know if Westbrook and Harden could play at that level all year long. It seems like Curry's kind of turning it on right now.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on that. Definitely Westbrook kind of running out of gas, especially with the Cantor injury. So much put onto him. But talking about another splash brother, we'll go to shooting guards. We got number one, Jimmy Butler, number two, DeMar DeRozan, number three, Klay Thompson, four, CJ McCollum, and at five, finishing it off, a new face, Bradley Beal.
Who did he replace?
Avery Bradley, who's out with injury for like the last few weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the list is solid. My only gripe, I actually want to hear what you guys got to say about this, but like Bradley Beal's great, but how much better is he over Devin Booker? Because, all right, so Bradley Beal's average like 20 points a game right now, right? Devin Booker reached that in his second year.
Yeah, with shooting guards, I hear what Greg's saying about Booker, but I also think Beal and Wall have become a lot more comfortable with one another, Nick.
Yeah.
And you know, there were definitely some talk about how these two guys weren't getting along. And I think I watched this Wizards-Knicks game the other night, and it just seems like Beal's a lot more comfortable in the offense, and he's kind of finding himself. And I think no one ever really questioned his ability. I think it was more of him just staying on the floor.
Yeah, and I think Beal's probably at another level defensively. Like, he obviously has to be more consistent, but I think Booker's a young player. Like, he still has some time to learn. He got really hot this last month, but he's had like his hot and cold patches during the season. Obviously that's something we saw from Beal earlier in his career, but now Beal being healthy this season, I think he's a lot more consistent and he's having a great impact on the team. And that duo you see with him and John Wall is very deadly.
Yeah,
definitely.
So yeah, I mean, I'm okay with Bradley Beal on here. I mentioned the Harris. I think I talked about on here before too, is like, if he's healthy, when he's healthy, you see how good he really is. When he's not healthy, you kind of forget about him a little bit. Do you think Klay has any argument for the number two spot, or?
Nah, not really. I think he's right. I mean, he's quietly having a great season. Maybe because DeMar is hurt right now, you could probably push him up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably the main reason why you put Klay in the two spot, just because of DeMar's injury.
In small forwards, we didn't really have any changes. LeBron, KD, Kawhi, Giannis, Paul George. No really complaints here. I don't. Maybe you could probably make an argument that Paul George has started to turn it up, and maybe you could swap him and Giannis because the Bucks have struggled a lot. But other than that, the top three small forwards, I don't think it's going to change all season long pretty much.
Yeah.
So power forwards, it gets a little interesting. Number one's a lock to Anthony Davis, obviously. Number two, Draymond Green. Number three, Blake Griffin. Four, Paul Millsap. Five, Kevin Love. So initially, what would you change right off the get-go?
Anthony Davis, Draymond Green. I don't really see any changes. Maybe I'll put Blake over Draymond right now, just because of the responsibility that he has to kind of like keep the Clippers, you know, still above water.
Stay afloat, yeah.
Yeah. Without Chris Paul right now. But yeah, I think that's the only reason why I would put Blake up there. Draymond Green's still an all-star, you know, still like, you know, the Swiss Army knife for Golden State, and he's almost like the emotional leader of the team, like that has to like, and he takes on like talking to the media about the team's problems and like kind of deflects a lot of the talk that Kevin Durant or Curry might be dealing with. So like, Draymond Green is really, yeah, he's really important to that team, but I think I'll put Blake up there just for the where the Clippers are right now.
We talked about some guys getting back in their flow. Griffin's definitely one of those guys. I mean, he's starting to look healthier. Against the Warriors the other night, I saw some plays that reminded me of the young pre-Chris Paul Blake Griffin.
Oh, he had that dunk on somebody who he just destroyed them. He almost, like, jumped over them.
Yeah, he looks a little, like I said, a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more agile. I don't know if he's a better player than Draymond Green right now, just because the way that team's rolling. But it's nice to at least see Griffin reestablish some of the things that we might have thought he'd lost in some injuries.
Yeah, I mean, give him some time, maybe another week or so, to really get back from that injury and see if he can turn it up to even another level. And, I mean, if he plays at his full potential, I think he's better than Draymond just because of what he brings offensively. I always just think about that year in the final, the year in the playoffs where he got injured, and he was just he was playing like one of the best players in the playoffs, and that's the year they lost to the Rockets. Yeah. So It's just tough to see, but I think he should be able to get back. And
what Shaq said the other night is he's got to attack.
Yeah, exactly.
Be aggressive, and if he would, you know, try to get his buckets inside, and obviously we know what he could do in transition at that size.
But he can pass the ball pretty well for a big.
If he's aggressive and he's attacking the cup and he's on the offensive glass and he's sizing guys up and squaring guys up on the elbow and going one-on-one, you know, I think Griffin is definitely obviously still one of the premier players in this league.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, once to be said, a dying position, the center position, is now full of big names. So number one, DeMarcus Cousins. Number two, Karl Anthony Towns. Three, Marcus Gasol. Four, Rudy Gobert. Five, Joel Embiid. What are your thoughts on this list?
I think DeMarcus Cousins is like the best big man in the league, but I feel like his off the court attitude and just overall in general, it could cause him to slip, and it could affect like his future employment, because I was listening to Bomani. I think he said the best. It's like Cousins is the player that you want to trade for, but Carmelo is the person that you want to trade for. You know what I mean? Something like that. So it's like, you know, and then you got him like yelling at reporters and like threatening people, and like a lot of people are like afraid of Cousins. So I think if he wants to really reach his full potential, he's gotta reel in some of that rage and apply it to something else to so it doesn't like affect the team's play. And you know, and him, you know, being a successful player in the league, like a lot of people want to trade for Cousins. He can help a lot of teams, but I mean, how do you even know if you have the personnel to corral a guy like that? So I think that's something that you got to look at. Like, of course, he's a great player, but mentally, he's got to get in a different space to, you know, keep going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think you if you bring in Cousins, you need a strong locker room. But I think he's just so talented, and he produces so much numbers that it's impossible kind of not to put him at number one. Yeah. Just his abilities offensively, like what he's able to do. He puts his team on his back a lot of games, and he's clutch in the fourth quarter too. So obviously the antics aren't great, but I don't think anybody's really close to taking that number one spot from him.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about – oh, go ahead, Derek.
Gasol's been terrific also. I know he's probably cemented in there at three because of Towns' ability, but with the Grizzlies, the way they're playing and being that they're in the playoff chase, I wouldn't necessarily hesitate to put Gasol right now maybe in that number two spot. I know it's tough to imagine him at being better than Towns and what all Towns brings to the table, but I think Gasol has definitely been one of the more impressive players all year.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to take Karl Anthony Towns to that two spot just because, you know, the flash that he brings and, you know, his potential. So, I mean, I could see it, though. Gasol has really done some great things. Him and Mike Conley have really kept that Grizzlies team, you know, in a good playoff spot, and it looks like they'll probably go on to make the playoffs and maybe even compete for a home court spot.
Yeah, Gasol could actually rebound a little better. I didn't know that he was only at six rebounds a game. So, I take that back. Drop him under Gobert.
Oh, what do you guys think about Joel Embiid making the list for the first time at the number five spot?
I think it's great. I mean, he's leading the resurgence in Philly. Even though the team is, like, you know, headed to the lottery, he's got people, like, buying tickets and selling out.
Building up that hype.
Yeah, you know, everybody's ready for that the Philadelphia future. And then you got Ben Simmons coming back after the All-Star break. So, yeah, Joel Embiid is kind of leading the rush. The only thing I'm concerned about is, like, his health. You know, and, like, should Philly, like, hold off on trading for Okafor if, like, his injuries kind of lingering, you know?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think they've done a good job with the minute restrictions and the rest, but it's still something you always got in the back of your head. You guys don't think maybe somebody like DeAndre Jordan should have made the list?
Drummond.
Yeah, maybe DeAndre being a first-time All-Star too.
Say it again?
I said maybe DeAndre being like a first-time All-Star. He gets some recognition too.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised. I mean, but also the Embiid hype is real. He's also done so much for that team, and you have to figure that they don't really have a lot of great players on that team. So it's not like anyone's taking the pressure off him. He's creating a lot of things by himself, and the other team is knowing that Embiid's really the only one that can make some of these plays. So I think you got to take that into account as well. So I'm okay with the number five. Obviously, there's other guys, but it's so tight. There's so many good centers this year, and so many guys have really added to their game.
Whiteside also could be slide in there at 14 rebounds a game.
Yeah. But moving on from the rankings, obviously in February, we're going to touch on trade rumors every week just because I love them and it's important. But so this week, you know, some people have mentioned that they've heard from executives around the NBA that they think that the Celtics and the Bulls could reopen that Jimmy Butler trade. Do you think this is a move the Bulls should make? How hard should the Celtics pursue it? What do you guys think?
I think they gotta keep Jimmy Butler. I mean, they're still in the playoff race too. But then you got talks like Dwayne Wade was saying, if the Bulls don't go anywhere, it's gonna leave after the season. And if you give up Jimmy Butler, you're hitting the reset button and you're losing like probably the best, you know, shooting guard in the East. And then where do you really go from that? You know? And if you're in a playoff race, you're not gonna get a high pick anyway. So there's no really good trade-off if you give up Butler and start over just at that, you know, right now.
Yeah, but what happens if Boston's like, all right, we'll offer you the Nets pick?
Oh, then that's something to think about.
You know, or that, I mean, they could send out some pretty good packages.
They have some really good assets, Boston.
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like they could kind of like, if you trade with Boston, they could kind of like give you a boost to your rebuild. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, if you rebuild, the Bulls would be in a difficult spot, obviously, because it's not like they have tons and tons of young talent and they have some veterans. But if they did trade Butler, you would think that they'd probably move Wade and they'd probably try to move Robin Lopez as well and maybe try to move Rondo or just cut them all out. Yeah. So, but I don't know. I think if the Bulls continue to struggle, it would kind of make sense in a way. It depends if you think Jimmy Butler will stick around for your whole rebuild, even though he's already shown, you know, anger against the front office. There's been reports this week that the players think that a coach is spying on them in the locker room to the front office.
Yeah, that's weird.
So, like, there just seems to be some bad vibes there. And unless you have a plan to change around the front office and let go of the GM, then I think maybe you do move Butler because that relationship is not in a good spot and you don't want to see his, you know, get in a situation where everybody knows you want to trade Butler and you don't have the leverage and you don't get as much value as you could.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason why I thought that they probably should hold on to him is because of the recent talks of them being interested in Jahlil Okafor. And I was thinking if they could swing a deal for that, I mean, I think they have guards that Philly could use, like, you know, Grant or Cannon or Valentine. That could be a deal that could help, you know, probably give them a better look, you know, in terms of playoff appearance, you know.
But if you look at it from the big picture, just as like a like going forward, like even if you do, Okafor would be a nice piece to keep if you were doing a rebuild. But I think, like, no matter what, the Bulls really aren't going to do anything that's going to give them a chance to compete in the East and really come out of the Eastern Conference.
That's true.
Yeah, I know you guys are talking about, you know, Celtics deals. I'm just a little concerned about what a star such as a Butler, or even naming Melo was talked about, and what that could do to their chemistry and camaraderie. I know what Stevens is building there, and Celtics have been good of late. We know they added Horford, and then Isaiah Thomas has been playing his rear end off. So I know that they probably end up needing someone down the road to get over to the top, but I'm just concerned about where they would go from here, adding another piece at this point in the season with how well they've played.
Yeah, I mean, but do you think they add this another piece, maybe a Butler, and they see, like, the potential of possibly dethroning the Cavs and making that run for the finals? Like, they're right there. The Cavs have had their struggles. They're starting to play really well, but they probably still need another piece to get past the Cavs, and they need, you know, like someone else can score,
yeah,
consistently.
Yeah, it could. It's definitely possible. Just, I don't know, maybe let this team grow on their own and add somebody in the offseason is possible too. I don't know. Just at this point in the season, I think it could be dangerous to some of their chemistry. It depends on who it is and depends on who they give up also. But obviously, Butler is a two-way guy, you know, a very valuable piece at that position. And you know, if they end up trading like a Crowder or Bradley in a draft pick, I'd, you know, maybe think about doing that. But it's just interesting to see when a team's on the upswing playing well like this, what a move like this could possibly do.
Yeah, what it could do to the chemistry. We saw a few years ago when the Mavericks were having a great season, they made a move for Rondo and things went downhill.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but I think the Celtics at one point are going to have to add somebody. And with the new CBA, it's going to be a lot harder to sign big-time free agents. But I would see a push for a trade as a real possibility. And that Nets pick is really looking beautiful as a trade asset, or if you want to keep it and then draft a player and trade him later on and do it in the offseason.
Yeah.
See how things kind of pan out.
Are you saying the Nets don't have a streak in them to end this year?
No, I don't think so.
You don't see that 10 point anywhere?
I'll just take it as it is. Yeah. But enough about Jimmy Butler. Some other news this week. So a lot of talk this from hoopshype.com. The bigs are on the move. Names have been made available. Al Jefferson, Serge Ibaka, Jan Mahimni. We talked about Serge a little bit last week. Who do you think gets moved? Would you make a move for any of these guys if you're ex team? What do you guys think?
It's tough. I mean, I think Ibaka, like as a defensive player, I think he can help a lot of teams, you know, defensively in the playoffs, and he can hit the outside shot. So teams like maybe Boston, if they need like that front court piece to go along with Horford, I still think, you know, we talked about before, like the Nets got to make a move and get rid of Lopez, and I think Lopez can help a team like the Thunder who just lost Cantor, and they need like, you know, another score to go along with Westbrook, because I think Oladipo could be a little bit better than 16 points per game, and Robeson hasn't like come out. I think he's averaging like 6 points per game, so he could be a little better. So I think, yeah, the Thunder, I think they should be buyers coming towards the trading deadline. They could use another big with that injury.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And so the thing about Serge Ibaka that'll be interesting, I know we talked about it last week, but the Magic will probably get really desperate if no one makes an offer for him, because they want to get something before he becomes a free agent this offseason. So yeah, you could really get him for a nice price, possibly close to the deadline.
What was the move that the Hornet – did the Hornets and Milwaukee?
Oh, yep. Correct. And we did have a trade this week. Right. The Hornets made a trade to the Bucks. They traded Roy Hibbert and Spencer Hawes for Miles Plumlee. So Plumlee's in Charlotte, and Hawes and Hibbert are in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about. I mean,
yeah,
did one of those guys? I mean, Hibbert, I know, hasn't been really doing anything, but I thought Spencer Hawes like a nice little piece off the bench for them.
I mean, I think Hibbert and Hawes are both like pretty good bench players. They both have like a niche. Like Hibbert, you can kind of bring in. He plays okay defense on some of the true big men in the league, and then Hawes kind of gives you somebody who can hit the three ball a little bit, and you know he kind of can pass the ball a little bit too. So. Yeah.
Well, the deal was really about shedding the
Miles Plumlee contract.
Yeah, the 4-year, $50 million. Why did you do this kind of deal?
Yeah, it honestly made no sense in the first place, because last year Miles Plumlee, they didn't even really play him, and this year they don't really play him that much either. I mean, he had some good moments a few years ago when he was on, I think, on Phoenix, but like he hasn't really done much since. So it looks like Mason is the better Plumlee.
Yeah. 100%. No, that's not close.
Yeah. But it's funny is when they were first in the league, it was like somewhat close. And then just like Mason just took his game to another level because he's actually a starting center.
Yeah. But then I think the Hornets did it. Another reason why I did it is because like from what I was reading, you know, with Cody Zeller being down, Plumlee can kind of match that energy.
Maybe from an athletic body.
Yeah. He's athletic. He adds athleticism to the front court, and he can kind of match Zeller from the energy standpoint, like running the floor and getting offensive boards, putbacks and stuff like that. So he can definitely help in that regard.
And it opens up a roster spot. So
yeah.
I can't wait to see what the Cavs are gonna do. And I know they worked out a few guys, and I know they
Mario Chalmers, Kirk Heinrich, Jordan Farmar, and Lance Stevenson.
There are also some interest in, I think they talked about Bogut. The Cavs maybe wanted to pick up Bogut or Calder or something. So
and they had some interest in Darren Williams as well.
Yeah.
Which would make sense now for the Mavs. We'll talk about Yogi Ferrell a little later.
We mentioned that before. We thought Deron Williams would be a good fit for the Cavs.
I think that would make a lot of sense. I don't know. It just seems like a good fit. If they got Bogut and Deron Williams, that would be really good.
Yeah.
That would it'd be really interesting if they had Bogut and the Cavs and Warriors in the finals and how that would go down.
What about what about Nate Robinson? He's kind of made some like news recently, like trying to get back in the NBA. And
I don't think anybody really wants to deal with Nate.
Nah.
No, I think he would already have been on a team if any, you know, like.
Well, it would be typical Nate to kind of ride the Cavs into, like, I feel like he's always that guy that will come off the bench for 9 minutes, and why is Nate Robinson playing the NBA Finals right now type of guy, and at the end of the Cavs bench, and he gets
around. They get desperate maybe, but I don't know. I don't think they really would. I think they'd go with one of the other guys. I think Jordan Farmar has been rumored to have, you know, the best chance of signing.
Yeah.
He's kind of like a stable guy out of all all of them. I mean, Hyward's pretty stable as well, but he's had his injury history.
Yeah.
So,
and Lance, I really thought after Nate had that run in Chicago, after that playoff run, and then going to Denver, that his career was – I even remember telling him, I'm like, can you be an all-star in Denver? And I spoke to him at the camp, and he's like, man, I hope so. But I don't know. I think after that whole playoff run, we just haven't heard much from him.
Yeah, he had that really good run in Chicago in the playoffs where he had – you know, he just was hitting ridiculous shots. And I think he did that again where he signed with somebody where he got, like, hot for a little bit, but then he got cold, and then he gets a little – he's really sporadic. Yeah. And obviously he's undersized, and being undersized like that, you're not going to be a great defender.
Yeah.
We talk about a team that's desperately turned their season around, and that's the Dallas Mavericks and your boy Yogi Ferrell.
Yeah, no, the Mavs picked up Yogi Ferrell from the D League. He was on the Brooklyn Nets earlier this year. He was on the Long Island Nets, the D League team, and he was picked up. And now the Mavs have been starting him. They've been going on a 4-game win streak. He's had some incredible moments, some 20-point games, and last night he hit 9 threes. So, and the Mavs have turned up. Obviously, Wesley Matthews has picked it up a little bit, Harrison Barnes. So this Mavs team looks like to get back in the Western Conference playoff picture.
Yogi mania. No, and I touched on this last time when I was telling you, and not just I was at, you know, the Long Island Nets tryout and all the things that I – and benefits that I think the D-League has provided for the NBA. But anytime somebody gets called up and has the opportunity to make an impact like this, it's obviously a special story. I mean, he had some success at Indiana and, you know, being their all-time assist guy and undrafted, undersized. But getting the opportunity to fill in, the Mavs had some injuries. Seth Curry, D-League experience also in the backcourt. And it's nice to see guys who are getting called up get their opportunity and definitely capitalize on it.
Yeah, and it seems like the D-League has become a bigger piece of the NBA. I think in a few seasons we'll see every NBA team have their own D-League team.
Yeah.
And with the new CBA, I know there's some parts of the deal that allows you to have, like, extra roster space for guys that go back and forth. So I think it's a big part. It allows you kind of to develop your younger players. It's not as scary now when you take, you know, like a 19 or 20-year-old in the draft because you don't have to give them NBA minutes. You can give them D-League minutes. So, and you kind of watch them develop. I know with the Nets case, they've had sent a lot of guys back and forth, and they've picked up some guys from the D-League. So it can have success, and it can really help you develop your players. And it gives a lot of guys opportunities.
Yeah, and it helps them stay ready during the season if they're not getting the minutes that they're getting.
And it also helps them learn NBA offenses and defenses because a lot of time the D-League team is running the same sets that the NBA team is running. So it's definitely a benefit.
Well, maybe not. Yeah,
sorry, Greg. One of my friends who played on the Spurs D-League was rooming with Simmons and just talked about how they're running exactly what the Spurs are running. So to just piggyback that point that Nick just made, it's the minor leagues of the NBA. It's come a long way. It's helping, like Nick said, putting less pressure on draft picks. And I think anytime you got a guy like Yogi that comes in here and makes an impact, it only gives more legitimacy to what these guys are doing down there.
Yeah, and make a point about Yogi. Like, obviously, he was brought up by the Nets at one point. I'm not defending the Nets. I'm just saying, you know, in certain situations, I think young players are going to be able to excel a little bit more. If you take a situation where the Nets, where he's playing with, you know, maybe like one or two proven veterans, and then you bring him to Dallas, where he's playing with other guys who can handle the ball, they feel comfortable in the offense, and they kind of understand what they're doing, it's going to make him feel a lot more comfortable and really showcase his skills. So I'm always been a big believer of adding, like, veterans into the mix. When you rebuild.
Yeah.
Or, like, for another example would be like Philly. I think they added some veterans this year, kind of added some stability. Obviously Joel Embiid has been huge, but I think they would probably mention that the veterans have had an impact. You know, Ilyasova, Gerald Henderson, just, you know.
I don't think anybody's looking at this situation, looking at the Nets, be like, what did you do? Like, and same thing as I felt when, you know, Lynn had his stretch or any other call up or, you know, journeyman story. It's usually not one of those situations where the other franchises are like, oh man, we let this one get away. I mean, it's just right place, right time. Yeah. And we understand that these players, like a Lynn, turned himself into a nice player, but Yogi Ferrell's ceiling is, you know, he could be a nice player, not an all-star player probably. Yeah, it's not like one of those situations where with the Blazers and missing out on Durant in a draft situation, you know, one of those. It's just nice that, you know, these D-League guys and call-ups and journeymen and people that have been told no a few times undrafted find homes. And so I don't think the Nets look at it as a regret. I think it's more of, you know, it's a nice story, and, you know, that Ferrell could go from a D-League D-League organization right to the league and make an impact.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, but I also am just saying the point that I think having veterans around young players definitely has its benefits. You know, just because some of these guys, some of these situations these players are put in where they're just surrounded by other young guys and they don't really know what to do, it's kind of difficult for them to succeed.
Of course.
Another team, I guess since we talked on the Mavs, we got to mention the Miami Heat. The Heat are on a 9-game win streak, and Eric Spoelstra has done a great job coaching all types of players. They've brought in guys that, you know, been from the D-League, just 10-day contracts, and Spoelstra makes them play. Dragic has really carried them. Deion Waiters has come back from injury and has looked great. What are your thoughts about the Heat?
Man, the Heat have been terrific, and, you know, it's not just Waiters. It's, you know, they've had some D-League call-ups as well, and obviously Whiteside plays a major role, but shout out to Dragic, who I think has been real consistent lately also. And this is a team that started the season
bad, just like the Mavericks.
Yeah, they were 11-30 at one point.
Yeah. And there was talks about blowing it up, you know, sending everybody out, getting ready to Dragic, and just starting that full rebuild around Whiteside. And it looks like now that things have kind of changed and there's some excitement. You know, going on a 9-game win streak is no joke.
Yeah, and they'll probably get one today. They're at home against the Sixers. They could get one again today, and then they go on a 4-game road trip. But, you know, they've won some, you know, obviously beating the Warriors is in outside, and they beat the Rockets and the Warriors at home. So
in the fashion that they beat the Warriors, it was a Deion Waiters, you know, so hitting that game winning shot.
Yeah. No, so it's like a terrific story for now.
Exactly. And I mean, you got to give a lot of credit to Eric Spoelstra. Obviously, a lot of like people have been in the past in a few years when he had LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, and it'd be like, oh, anybody could coach them. Anybody could get them to the finals, but he's actually a really good coach. Like, he's getting the best out of Deion Waiters. He's getting the best out of these D-League guys. He's got the best out of Whiteside. He's able to, you know, kind of work these personalities and make everything work. He's also getting the best out of James Johnson, who's been another great piece for them.
Yeah, that's true. And he wanted to kill somebody the other day.
Yeah, when they fouled Whiteside, James Johnson came through. That's a real teammate right there, though.
Tyler Johnson's also played pretty well.
Yeah. And they have Richardson as well, who's been banged up. So, I mean, they have some names, too. And Justice Winslow's out for the whole year. So
Carl White was the D-League guy that I was thinking of. That is, they called him up, and they haven't lost since he's been in – I mean, he only plays 15 minutes a game. But they have a nice young nucleus, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely give them credit, possibly turning their season around.
The narrative has changed in both Miami and Dallas. The narrative has changed.
And it's funny because both these teams at one point were the second to worst team in their conferences, and now they'll both probably be competing for 8 seed possibly.
Yeah. Because you got Milwaukee ahead of you who's kind of slipping, and like the Knicks are probably going nowhere. So they're really just competing with the Hornets and the Pistons, and they can make a real run at it and put the pressure on these guys to you know, kind of hold that spot. And Chicago Bulls too, they're kind of slipping too. So there's a real chance for the Heat to get back in the playoffs.
Yeah, they just need to really turn it up, continue to turn it up.
Yeah.
Well, so this week we also had the All-Star announcements for who's going to be in the dunk contest and who's going to be in the three-point contest. We're not going to do picks. We'll save that for All-Star weekend. But initial thoughts, so for the dunk contest, Derrick Jones Jr., Aaron Gordon, Glenn Robinson III, and DeAndre Jordan. So DeAndre bringing a little bit of star power to the dunk contest.
Yeah, DeAndre's a nice pick. I mean, he's – outside of Blake Griffin, Lob City, like he's like he puts people in the stands too. So I think DeAndre could be good. Not sure what to expect from Glenn Robinson. Doesn't really strike me as like the most athletic guy. I really want to see what Derrick Jones does because he was like the premier guy as far as like dunking in the D League. He's like the guy there. So
yeah, I mean, take a look at his highlight tapes if you're not really familiar with him. Obviously, he hasn't really played much in the NBA. He doesn't have a dunk this season.
Yeah,
but he has dunks in the D League, and his highlight tape is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, so he could spark the crowd. But who's the last guy you mentioned?
Aaron Gordon's back too.
Oh, Aaron Gordon. Yeah, so that's not bad. I mean, maybe I would have taken out Glenn Robinson and added somebody else, like just another person. But I mean, as far as that's concerned, yeah, it's a pretty good group.
I'll be mad.
What do you think about it?
I'll always be mad about the dunk contest until they take my idea that I've been pushing, and I think I've brought this up to you, Nick, for a while. I've been pushing this for a while now. Give me the four best dunkers in the NBA.
Yeah.
Give me the four best YouTube dunkers and let them go at it. I've been playing that for a while, And until
Yeah,
that
that's
happens.
not even fair. Like those YouTube guys, they do that for a living. Like,
Yeah,
you
you know
mean
what
like
though?
Jordan Kilgannon and stuff like that? Like that's what they do.
No, I know that, but in like a bracket style, I think it would be cool or something like that. I don't know. I just want to see like somebody like bring out the best in some of these guys. I know we've wanted LeBron to do it for a while, and like Westbrook hasn't been in it, but I just want like the competitiveness of these NBA guys to come out. And I feel like bringing somebody that's not in the league that does it on the street would be something that would want these guys to say, like, listen, I know these guys do this for a living, but
I'm not gonna show
I want to get my competitive juices flowing because like
you.
I don't know. I just feel like that'd bring out the best in those guys, and it'd be something that
Well, I
I.
thought last year we probably had one of the best dunk contests
That's
in a
true.
while
That's
with
true.
Levine and Gordon. It's kind of sucks that Levine's not in it, but so. But I mean, I think the NBA probably wouldn't want to do that just from a business perspective, like bringing in a guy off the street, and like if the players lose, it's like not a good look.
Yeah, it's true.
You know what I mean? So I mean, I think they could just try to get bigger names. Like DeAndre's a good name. Aaron Gordon obviously has built his name up through the dunk contest.
We'd
So
always
I
like
mean,
to see Westbrook in at once.
You know what? They should
Westbrook.
have put Towns in.
Yeah. He probably didn't. I
Well, they
mean,
have to agree to it also.
yeah. I would
I'm
probably
sure
agree
they
with
asked.
Greg. I'm kind of intrigued by Derrick Jones Jr., but Glenn Robinson the third, he's gonna have to surprise me because I would probably rather have seen somebody else.
Wait, has Wiggins ever done it?
No.
I don't think so.
Yeah, see, that's another option too. But
Yeah,
yeah,
he could probably throw down some nasty stuff. He gets some advice from his teammate too.
DeAndre Jordan won't win unless like they throw Brandon Knight out there and he lets him dunk on him or something. I don't know. Aaron Gordon has a great opportunity. Jones, like you said, the only guy who's never dunked in an NBA game to be in the dunk contest. So, and
Yeah,
then
that DeAndre
interesting.
has a legitimate like chance to win too, because like we've seen big guys like do
Well, he
well.
also has Chris Paul probably throwing him the lob too, so he can
Did
get some
Dwight win
too there.
1 year? Dwight won 1 year.
Yeah,
Dwight
Dwight
won one
won,
year. Yep.
and then Amari had a good year that 1 year. He did it with Nash with the ball off his head and stuff like that. So DeAndre has a chance to do it too.
Yeah. So, but then we'll talk about the 3-point contests. We got Eric Gordon, Kyrie Irving, Kyle Lowry, Wes Matthews, CJ McCollum, Klay Thompson, Kemba Walker, and Nick Young. So no Steph Curry and no big men. What do you guys think?
I won't watch.
I don't know about this one. Devin Booker should be here. Joe Ingles should be in here.
Yeah, I was surprised Otto Porter and Joe Ingles weren't on there because they're like been back and
Especially
forth
Otto
as
Porter.
3-point percentage.
Yeah, isn't he like leading the league in
Yeah, Joe
turnovers?
Ingles and Otto Porter have been going like 1-2 all year. So,
Yeah, disgusting. Channing Frye, like you gotta put the best at it in the contest. And like Kyle Lowry, like I don't see any excitement there. Kemba's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, I would even take Ryan Anderson over like one of these guys. So yeah, I'm not really excited about 3-point contest this year.
yeah, I mean, I'll still watch obviously because it's still interesting, but I think it'll be good. Just it would be, I would like to see maybe like a Kyrie and Klay finals. I think Nick Young will probably bring spark too.
Skills
Or
contest would be funner than
Seth
that.
Curry should be in it. Seth Curry should be in there.
Oh, Seth too. Yeah. I said to you guys before the show started, it'd be cool if they had like a 6-9 and over 3-point contest for the bigs because we got, Embiid, Porzingis, Lopez all shooting threes now. So,
Why isn't Porzingis in it?
yeah, it'd be cool to see some like bigs out there. The skills challenge, we got some bigs though. That'll be fun. We got the Taco Bell skills challenge, Devin Booker, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, Joel Embiid, Gordon Hayward, Kristaps Porzingis, Isaiah Thomas, John Wall. So that's got some major pop to it.
Yeah. I wonder what DeMarcus is gonna do if he misses a pass or something. He might flare up and like break the obstacles and stuff. Like that should be fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty excited to see all those guys. It's nice to see them all on there. But All-Star Weekend should be great.
A big guy actually won that a couple. I didn't tell, somebody won it. A big guy won it.
Yeah. But that we'll give our picks for All-Star Weekend during All-Star Weekend.
Super
Before we get
Bowl.
out of here, before we get out of here, we got Super Bowl picks. Greg, I'll let you start this off.
Oh, man. All right. So my heart wants Atlanta to win because it's a nice city. And, Matt Ryan's having a good year. He's a possible MVP. But the only thing that sucks is that, like, if I really had to bet on it, like, or I had to put my life on it, I would have to pick the Patriots just because of experience and You know, I still think Brady is fueled by, you know, what happened to begin the season with the ban and, you know, not playing for those four games and stuff like that. So I would have to pick the I'll pick the pass, but as my heart goes, like if the Falcons can get out to an early like 14-point lead, like, and just hit the Patriots like quick and early, I think they have a chance. Because if not, then, you know, the pass is going to do what they do all the time, or do what they usually do. But
it's a hard answer to follow up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to pick the Pats. I'm also going to be try to root for Atlanta, but
yeah,
I'm going to pick the Pats, you know, 34-21, maybe 24. I don't know. I think they win by a couple of scores. I think the inexperience of the Falcons hurts them in this game. And I don't know. I think, like you said, the anger of those that four-game suspension is going to carry Mr. Brady to his fifth title. That's my prediction. Nick?
I'm going with the upset.
There you go. Do it.
I'm going with the Atlanta Falcons. You know, what Bill Belichick does best is he takes away your best player. You know, so they'll probably take Julio Jones away. But the thing is, the Falcons are well-equipped. They have Freeman. They have Coleman. They have Gabriel. They have Sanu. And they have Matt Ryan. And they have an underrated offensive line. I underrated them 2 weeks ago. So I think going
well, biasly underrated them.
Yeah. But I think, you know, they can definitely win this game. A lot of people are like, oh, the Patriots will be more experienced or the better team. Like, the Patriots' offense is good, but it's not great because they're obviously missing their best piece in Gronkowski. Obviously, Belichick has had 2 weeks to kind of study this team and figure things out and really take shots at it. But I think Atlanta is very talented. What's going to be the trick is probably their defense. And they're going to need someone to step up defensively for Atlanta. My pick is probably Vic Beasley. Obviously, a pass rusher getting after Brady is going to be a very big thing. So if he can really have a big game, that would have a big impact. And offensively, I don't think they're going to have much issue scoring. The only difference will be if Matt Ryan needs to make sure he doesn't turn the ball over. Against Green Bay, obviously, they blew them out. But he did have a few turnovers that didn't happen. You know, they had two fumbles and probably about three dropped interceptions. So he can't do that against New England because they're not going to make the same mistakes. Yeah. So, but I think Atlanta can win this game. Give me Atlanta 31-27.
31. Yeah, I think everyone kind of assumes that it's going to be,
you know, a high-scoring game.
Yeah, high 20s, you know, low 30s, high-scoring.
No, either team really has, like, I mean, they both have some great defensive players, but either defense is like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, the Patriots do a good job of making bad teams look terrible with defense, but, like, when they have to go against big-time offenses, they're not amazing. Last week, Le'Veon Bell – 2 weeks ago, Le'Veon Bell was hurt, and the Steelers' young receivers dropped a ton of deep balls.
You think the pass could stop
them? It's going to be interesting. I think the whole world kind of wants to see the Falcons win, but we don't. We kind of just assume that the Pats will.
Well, if you think about it, last time the Patriots were in the Super Bowl against Seattle, like, they pretty much lost that game. Seattle just handed it to them at the end for no reason instead of handing the ball to Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah,
true.
So, but it should be a good weekend. Obviously, you know, when your team loses the NFC Championship game, you're a little bit disinterested in the game. So I'll probably still watch, but I won't care quite as much.
And it's always great to start the Super Bowl off with, you know, the Knicks and Cavs in another
league. You got some basketball games, too, on Sunday before the football game, too.
Yep.
So, and like Greg said, Saturday, tonight, you got Cavs and Knicks. That should be a good one.
No, it's not.
You don't think it'll be a good one?
Nah. No, I actually think I disagree with Greg. I actually think that game's going to be close.
Yeah?
Yeah, I do. I don't know. I just think
– I feel like Porzingis is due for a huge game. Like, he hasn't had a big game in a long time.
Prime time. Prime time with all the stuff that's been going on. They've been beat down by them a couple of times in a row. I think they come out and compete. I mean, I picked the Cavs to win the game, but I think by
– Yeah, the Cavs can't afford to lose a game like this against the Knicks.
Three or four or five. Just, I don't think it's going to be a lot.
You know, LeBron loves playing at the Garden and putting on a show. So, that's, you know, I think that that's where the blowout comes from. Plus, you know, the struggling – That's been lingering and all the issues with them and teammates saying Tristan Thompson didn't earn his contract and things like that. Like, I know they're going to come out busting before the, you know, the Super Bowl. So, it'll be tough.
That wraps it up for this week's episode of the NBA Outlet. Thanks for listening. Make sure you hit that subscribe button.